Let's turn our attention back to the prophetic book of Amos. We're going to be in chapter number 8 today. Amos, remember, is a prophet from southern Judah, sent by God to northern Israel sometime in the last 40 years of northern Israel's history. He is there at Bethel, one of the golden calf sanctuaries, telling the people of northern Israel, because of their sin, judgment is coming. Exile is coming. Destruction is coming. And so he's just recently been told to go away. And in response to that, he told the priest that was warning him to leave, well, you know what? Your whole family is going to be messed up in the coming judgment, and you're going to be taken away into exile yourself. So Amos does not back off. So in chapter 8, God reveals to him a vision to reinforce the message that he is passing on to the northern Israelis. Chapter 8, verse 1, "This is what he who is God showed me. Behold, a basket of summer fruit." So nothing specific. Just think of anything that you're picking and harvesting in the latter portion of summer. And so he said, "Amos, what do you see?" And I said back, "A basket of summer fruit." You see, it's harvest time. And that's what you do at harvest time. You pick summer fruit. You might remember that Amos is primarily a shepherd. That's what he grew up working as. But he also said that he was a sycamore fig tree picker. He took care of the fig trees on a fig tree plantation near him and picked them whenever it was picking time. So maybe it's figs that he's looking at. So he says, "I see a basket of summer fruit." And then he who is said to me, "The end has come upon my people Israel," meaning it's harvest time, harvest of judgment time. "I will never again pass by them," which we saw that phrase just a few verses up. It's the idea of we're done. The time for my patience is at an end. I'm not going to delay this judgment any longer. And then he starts describing what's going to happen when the Assyrians sweep through as the judgment of God for the sins of northern Israel. "The songs of the temple," possibly the palace, our English Standard Version we're using right now has the word palace in a footnote as a possibility. It's the same word for temple and palace. So maybe it's the songs that they sing in their religious worship services, which might have some happy tunes, or it's the songs that they sing in the palace, the royal palaces, which are happy tunes for celebrating. Doesn't matter. "These songs shall become wailings in that day." They're going to be turned into sad songs, declares he who is God. "So many dead bodies, they're thrown everywhere." So that's what they're seeing in this coming judgment, is death and destruction. "Silence," which the word silence there, the English Standard Version translators seem to, by their punctuation and previous people working with marking the verses, seem to make it part of the lamentation. "So many dead bodies. They're thrown everywhere. Silence." But I actually wonder, is it silence as in quit talking about this, all this judgment that's coming, and listen up to the reason it's coming? Because the next thing we read in verse number 4 is, "Hear this." So quit talking, start listening. And, you know, Book of James talks about that idea that we need to be quick to hear and slow to speak. So maybe that's a little bit of what we're seeing here. "Hear this, You who trample on the needy and bring the poor of the land to an end. We've seen this condemnation of God earlier in the book, and we've seen it other places, and we'll see it in even more of the prophetic passages. Some of the upper crust in northern Israeli society are abusing the lower classes. They're taking advantage of them. They're putting them in jail or selling them as slaves because they can't pay the exorbitant prices that are being exacted by those merchants, the merchant class. And so these guys are coming under God's judgment. Hear this, you who trample on the needy and bring the poor of the land to an end, saying, when will the new moon be over that we may sell grain, and the Sabbath that we may offer wheat for sale? You have to remember, the new moon is the first day of a month. It was always a holiday. It was always a day off of work. And so the Jewish people were not supposed to be selling things on a day off. Same thing with the Sabbath. Every week on the seventh day of that week, nobody was supposed to be selling and buying. So these guys can't make any money on those days. And they're like, come on, when can we get back open again? That we may make the ephah small and the shekel great and deal deceitfully with false balances. So now we get a reminder that these guys are looking to increase their own profits by cheating. They make the measuring of an ephah smaller than it's supposed to be. So they're selling less product, and then the shekel greater. The shekel, remember, back at this time, is not a coin. It was a weight. And so by making the ephah small, they're selling less product. By making the weight great, they're getting more money for that less profit. And so they're dealing deceitfully with false balances. And they're doing this that we may buy the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals and sell the chaff of the wheat. So they're looking for a way to cheat the poorer people, the ones that are in desperate need of buying food and supplies. And they're going to put these guys in debt. And then when they can't pay off that debt, they're going to sell those people off as slaves. And by the way, they're also selling lower grade product. They're selling the chaff of the wheat at a high price. Verse 7, he who is has sworn by the pride of Jacob. Now we saw the pride of Jacob earlier in Amos, which actually was Jacob being too proud. This one seems to be a euphemism for God himself, because Jacob should be taking pride in he who is. So effectively, God is swearing by his own name, which we know there's other passages that talk about. The book of Hebrews referencing them. Since he had no one greater than himself to swear by, he swear by himself, right? So he who is swears by his own self. Surely I will never forget any of their deeds. I'm not going to forget how these deceitful rich people cheated the poor people. I'm not going to forget that. Verse 8, shall not the land tremble on this account, and everyone mourn who dwells in it? So isn't it bad enough that everybody in town, everybody in the country should be shocked and upset by the poor people being cheated by the rich people? And then all of it rise like the Nile and be tossed about and sink again like the Nile of Egypt. Everybody understood that the Nile has this flood time every year, and it's almost like clockwork. And the Nile comes up and goes out of its banks, and it goes back down again. And it actually helps with the fertilization of the land that they plant. But the point here is it's being used as an illustration of how the people in northern Israel should be rising up against the unrighteous actions of the upper crust, that they should not be allowing the poorer people to be cheated like this. And so God's saying, I'm not going to forget the rich people cheating the poor people, and I'm not going to forget everybody else keeping their mouth shut and not doing anything about it. Verse number 9. On that day, declares he who is God, I will make the sun go down at noon and darken the earth in broad daylight. So this is perhaps a reference to some literal darkness that he's going to bring in connection with the judgment of northern Israel that's coming at the hands of the Assyrians. We know that there are times that God blots out the sun. The day that Jesus was crucified, there was an unnatural darkness. Maybe there's something like that here. But we also know that there's the metaphorical idea of a day of darkness. It was just a dark period in my life, right? We use that. We talk about the period of the Middle Ages being referred to as the Dark Ages. So there may be a metaphor here of what's coming with the Assyrian invasion, and the judgment of God is going to be a dark period in Israeli history. Verse 10, I will turn your feasts into mourning and all your songs into lamentations. So all your happy eating, all your happy singing during that happy eating, no, that's going to stop. I will bring sackcloth on every waist and baldness on every head. They would wear sackcloth in times of sorrow as a reminder to themselves and also a demonstration to others that it was a time of sorrow. The baldness, a little bit harder for us to relate to. Some of the cultures of this time, and the Israelis picked up on this, is that when you were grieving, you cut off parts of your hair. The Israelis were actually told, you don't shave the corners of your head. You don't cut the hair of your forehead. And the reason that those rules were put in place was because that was part of the mourning ritual of some pagan people groups. And by doing this, they were talking to their gods. And so the idea that's being brought in here now is that some of the Israelis were going to be mourning over their condition as slaves as their hair gets cut off. Because some of them will be treated in a humiliating fashion by their captors. I will make it like the mourning for an only son, and the end of it like a bitter day. So the depth of sadness that's coming with the Assyrian invasion. Behold, the days are coming, declares he who is God, when I will send a famine on the land. Not a famine of bread, nor a thirst for water, but of hearing the words of he who is. Now, this is really rough here. God says, I'm going to do some really rough things in northern Israel. He's even predicted that there's going to be some famine times and some drought times, and those will take place. But he says, worst of all, I am going to quit talking to you because you're not listening. I'm going to quit sending prophets to you because you aren't repenting anyway. Verse 12, they shall wander from sea to sea, from north to east. They shall run to and fro to seek the word of he who is, but they shall not find it. So these guys are going to go into Assyrian captivity, and God's not going to talk to them for a while. And they're going to wish that he would. And this timeout is going to have an impact on some of the descendants of those that go into Assyrian captivity. When we start talking about the returns from Babylon, we should be expanding that to mean the return from Babylon and Assyrian captivity. Because a lot of those, a lot of the people that come to Jerusalem and to Judea during the time of Cyrus and afterwards, they are descendants, not just simply of those that went from Judea into Babylonian exile, but descendants of those that went from northern Israel into Assyrian exile. Verse 13, in that day, the lovely virgins and the young men, so the unmarried kids, shall faint for thirst, so the young people. Those who swear by the guilt of Samaria and say, as your God lives, O Dan. See, those are both references to the golden calf cult. The guilt of Samaria, and I think the Samaria here is the entire country of northern Israel, not just simply the city. The guilt of northern Israel has for a long time been the abomination of Jeroboam. That's the golden calf worship. And one of the golden calves was, of course, up in Dan. So Dan is mentioned here. And we already know that Amos is preaching at Bethel, which is where one of the original two golden calves was placed. But he doesn't stop there. He says, and as the way of Beersheba lives. So they're swearing by the golden calf, probably at Bethel, the golden calf at Dan, and then the golden calf at Beersheba. Now, we've had Beersheba come up before. This is not the Beersheba that's in Judea. This is Beersheba that seems to be in eastern northern Israel, on the east side of the Jordan Valley, where evidently another golden calf worship site is located for convenience sake. And so they are swearing by the golden calves. That's effectively what God is talking about here. Well, what's going to happen to them? They shall fall and never rise again. So God's prediction through Amos is everybody that's hooked into this golden calf cult, they're going to be punished. They're going to be judged. Chapter number 9. I saw the Lord, Adonai, I believe is the word here, instead of the divine name, standing beside the altar. Now, this is not the altar in Jerusalem, because Amos is a prophet to northern Israel, and he's specifically been sent to the worship site of Bethel, the golden calf shrine area. And so this is the altar there at Bethel. So I saw the Lord standing beside the altar at Bethel, and he said, strike the capitals until the thresholds shake, and shatter them on the heads of all the people. So now we have a prophecy made by Amos that at some point in the near future, there's going to be some sort of shaking of this temple building, and it's going to collapse. And it's going to be part of the judgment of God. And people are going to die in the collapse. Think about the collapse of the temple of the Philistines when Samson pushed those supporting posts out of the way. A lot of people that had come there to worship the god of the Philistines ended up dying in the collapse. So something similar is going to happen here. Those who are left of them meaning the survivors of the temple collapse, them I will kill with the sword, meaning the sword of probably the Assyrians. Not one of them shall flee away, not one of them shall escape. So God is bringing judgment, particularly against the golden calf cultists. And then he has some interesting descriptions here of, they may think they can get away from me, but they can't. There's nowhere in creation where these guys can escape my judgment. Verse 2, if they dig into Sheol, Sheol is the place of the dead, the dead spirits. And it's usually thought of as being below ground. So if they dig down deep and manage to get down into Sheol with all the departed spirits, well, from there I shall my hand take them. So I'll grab them right out of there and still judge them. If they can climb up to heaven, which, wow, climbing up to the highest mountain they can find, not going to do them any good. From there I will bring them down. If they hide themselves on the top of Carmel, now, Carmel is that big, long ridge line, the northwestern portion of which pokes out into the Mediterranean. You can see it on the coastline of Israel even today. That big ridge line was heavily forested back in ancient times. And so it was a good place to hide out in the wilds. And God says, even if they hide themselves there, from there I will search them out and take them. If they can hide from my sight at the bottom of the sea, you know, they pull a Jonah and they go out in a boat somewhere and they dive overboard thinking they can hide from me. No, not going to happen. From there, I will command the serpent, the snake, maybe sea serpent that we're thinking about here. The peoples of the Middle East thought about these sea serpents, these sea monsters going around in the Mediterranean. So even if they try to get away from me there, I'll send my serpent and it shall bite them. It'll get them. If they go into captivity before their enemies, so they end up being captured, there I will command the sword and it will kill them. I will fix my eyes upon them for evil and not for good. So God is very critical of those upholding the golden calf worship in northern Israel. And apparently the top tier people are going to be in really big trouble whenever the judgment falls. Verse 5, he who is the God of hosts, he who touches the earth and it melts, and all who dwell in it mourn. So we're talking about God's power here. All of it rises like the Nile and sinks again like the Nile of Egypt. So the land can like go up and down under God's mighty feet. Who builds his upper chambers in the heavens and founds his vault upon the earth. Who calls for the waters of the sea and pours them out upon the surface of the earth. He who is his name. So this is basically God reminding through Amos's preaching, I'm the God of creation. I'm the God of the stories of Scripture. I'm the God of miracles. I am the God of great power. My name is He Who Is. And if you do not maintain the covenant with me the way that I gave it to you, then judgment is coming. Verse 7. Are you not like the Cushites to me, O people of Israel, declares He Who Is? Now, meaning you guys are no longer special to me. The Cushites were the Ethiopians. And so God's saying, I am just about done with you. Did I not bring up Israel from the land of Egypt? and the Philistines from Kaphtor. Kaphtor is an ancient name for Crete and the islands near Crete. The Philistines migrated to the eastern end of the Mediterranean through several different periods of time. And so God's the one that brought them there. The Syrians from Tyre, the people currently living in Syria in the time of Amos, immigrated there southward from way up in north Mesopotamia. And weirdly enough, when the Assyrians come into Syria, they're going to take them back to Kur. Behold, the eyes of he who is God are upon the sinful kingdom, and I will destroy it from the surface of the ground, except that I will not utterly destroy the house of Jacob, declares he who is. So, I am going to bring northern Israel to an end, but I'm not bringing Israel completely to an end. That's a promise. For behold, I will command and shake the house of Israel among all the nations. So, kind of like a salt shaker, he's going to salt them out there into all the nations of the world. As one shakes with a sieve, but no pebble shall fall to the earth. The sieve was being used to probably shake sand away from stones and things. So it's an illustration of how God is going to save a remnant. That's the idea. Verse 10, all the sinners of my people shall die by the sword, who say, disaster shall not overtake or meet us. So the warning from God through Amos to the northern Israeli people is, you think you can escape my judgment, you're wrong. My judgment is going to fall upon the worst of the worst, but I will keep a remnant for myself, and I will secure them away in Mesopotamia, from which I will bring them back again to the promised land.